Committee on Education and General Government. We're going to start today a little bit out of order and go to a public hearing on HCR 4. Representative Gelser is here, if you'd come up.
And I'll just mention quickly, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, HCR 4 congratulates the Harmon Valley Children's Choir on 25 years of achievement and service to the youth of Mid-Willamette Valley.
Okay. Representative Gelser will fill us in.
Thank you, Chair Haas, members of the committee. HCR 4 is a simple resolution to honor a great children's choir that serves hundreds of children in the Mid-Willamette Valley area, Albany, Corvallis, Lebanon, Sweet Home. They travel around the world. They've sung in China, all over Europe. They're hosting a major international children's choral festival in Corvallis this summer. I invite you all to come. And beyond singing well, it's also a tremendous youth development activity. Students learn to be responsible. They learn to be accountable. They learn that their actions impact others. And as a parent of two kids who have sung in this choir, I have appreciated the growth in their personal responsibility. Great opportunity to recognize these great youth development programs, teachers, parents, and other volunteers. They sang at our opening ceremony, and it was fantastic, and I hope you'll pass this along so we can commemorate their 25 years of service to the youth of the Mid-Willamette Valley.
Okay. Very good. We don't have any other information in our packet here. Is Senator Morris involved in this?
He is not, but I am sure that he has heard them sing.
Mm-hmm.
And as his constituent, I would send him an email and tell him that it would be great to see him carry this bill on the floor.
Yes, okay. Questions? All right, then I'm going to close. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on this?
Or sing?
Or HCR 4?
I would do that, but my children would kill me.
I'm going to close public hearing on HCR 4 and open up a work session on HCR 4.
Mr. Chair, I move HCR 4 be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation to be adopted.
Senator Metzger moves that HCR 4 be reported out of committee with the recommendation that it be adopted. Any discussion? Seeing none. Any objections? Seeing none. So ordered. To go to the floor with a be adopted recommendation, and we will assign it to Senator Morris.
Thank you.
And I'll close the work session on HCR 4 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2570. Dan?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2570 directs the governor to appoint to the Oregon Health and Science University Board a member who has experience in representing interests of employees. There's no revenue impact, there is a minimal fiscal impact, so there was no statement issued.
Okay, why don't we start our testimony then with Mike Bandy and Sean Smelter.
Chair Haas and members of the Senate Education and General Government Committee. My name is Mike Bandy, and I work at OHSU, and I am also the president of AFSCME Local 328 OHSU Employees Union. I am here today to speak in support of House Bill 2570. This bill will designate an existing OHSU Board of Directors seat as a seat for a labor representative. OHSU and AFSCME Local 328 have enjoyed a productive and collaborative relationship over the years. We work as a team in our Workplace Partnership Initiative, Labor Management Committees, and in Process Improvement Programs. AFSCME Local 328 seeks to strengthen that relationship through this bill. We feel that giving voice to the employees through a labor seat should strengthen a relationship between employees and management, as they will be working closer together. The experience of employees of Portland's largest employer should allow for better decision-making from the board. AFSCME and ONA have a vested interest in making OHSU successful and the employer of choice in the Portland area. AFSCME and ONA feel strongly that the seat for labor should be included in ORS 353.040 to ensure the stability and long-term continuity the voice of the employees of OHSU on the board. The students of OHSU have had a seat on the board since its inception, while labor has not. The student board member has therefore been involved in making decisions that affect the largest population of OHSU, labor, with little or no knowledge of the workplace issues our employees experience every day. It's time for the largest population at OHSU to help move OHSU ahead with its knowledge, dedication, and heart. ASME and ONA feel that we have unique issues and concerns that only a labor person can properly understand, appreciate, and articulate. ASME and ONA have come together to urge the passage of this bill. Thank you, Chair Haas and members of the committee. We are happy to answer any questions you may have.
Hello. Thank you. I'm Sean Schnelzer. I thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm in support of House Bill 2570. I currently am a staff nurse in the OHSU Neuroscience ICU and have worked at OHSU since 1974, and I've been a nurse in critical care in Portland since 1986. I believe this bill will improve staffing and working conditions for nurses and for and improve care of patients. I have witnessed in my career how the great advances in technology have really improved dramatic improvements in medical care, but I've also experienced and witnessed how the dramatic staff cuts have had a great disregard for quality of care, and that there's been a lot of errors and harm done from this lack of quality. And this comes directly from not having enough nurses at the bedside. Nurses catch errors. Nurses they critically think, they put together what's going on with the patient, and communicate effectively with the team, with the physicians, with the pharmacists, and there's not enough nurses. A labor representative on the OHSU Board of Directors would be a voice to help remind staff, help hospital management, that the business of the hospital is to provide patient care. As nurses and the numerous other professionals are the workers that provide this care. An example is when the South Waterfront development happened, it would have been really to the advantage of OHSU to have a labor representative at the table helping them see the value of the workers. When they built the waterfront, they cut a really specific glaring example is when they cut the ICU pharmacy so they could build a pharmacy on the waterfront. There's many ICUs, and the ICU pharmacists were a really integral part of the critical care team. When they cut the pharmacy, the pharmacists would catch our errors. They'd help us with improved medication doses. They would help us see better doses for certain patients. They were a really important part of the team. And when they cut the pharmacy, they transferred this care to the central pharmacy. And there was a huge turnover in pharmacy staff, not pharmacists, pharmacy technicians. It was a devastating, the working conditions for the pharmacists were very terrible. The relationship between the ICU and the pharmacy became very frayed, and it was really important to have that communication and that working, that teamwork, and that was totally disrupted by this change. I only know one person from the original pharmacy. So this is a really good example of how a labor person could have said, you can't cut the pharmacy, you can't cut the workers. We are making some improvements in that situation with time, but it was really hard. I really love being a nurse. I love my job. I love what I do. I like caring for patients. And that's how I've been able to do it for a pretty long time for nurses. I find it's very important work. It's very valuable work, and I'm passionate about it. But it's really hard. The working conditions are very challenging. The workloads are heavy. And nurses are very, not just nurses, but the entire staff. Many fields are very burnt out. And there's a looming shortage of workers that's coming on the future. There's a lot of nurses who are burned out currently, and there's a shortage of nurses who are really willing to work in these conditions. But I'm 47, So I'm the average age of a nurse. We are all going to retire about the time the baby boomers hit, and there's going to be a huge need for care. So there's a huge shortage of nurses on the horizon. Having a labor person on the board of directors will help OHSU improve the working conditions so they can attract nurses and keep nurses during this upcoming crisis in the workforce. So, again, in conclusion, a labor representative would really help the OHSU board create a strategic plan that emphasizes the value of the work of its nurses, respiratory therapists, physical therapists, medical residents, pharmacists, radiology technicians, and all the other numerous sources of labor that really provide care and affect the lives of Oregonians. I think passing this House Bill 2570 would be very important to support the healing part of OHSU's mission, and I know I speak on behalf of my other nursing colleagues. Thank you.
Thank you both. some questions here. Could you walk us through the mechanics? The A. and Gross version says to assist the governor in appointing the two largest collective bargaining units shall submit a list of at least three nominees to the governor for consideration. Are you the two largest units? And does the governor have to pick someone from that list?
I think that's true.
Is it? I don't see almost. No, yeah, that's what I'm asking about in the next page two on line three. It says one person with experience representing the interest of employees. So. Clarification.
Chair Hass, Jack Dempsey from the Oregon Nurses Association. I'll just quickly walk through the bill and all of the changes in it here. In Section 1, Sub 2 on the first page, it does say that the governor shall pick from the names submitted by the two largest collective bargaining units. The change in Section 1, Sub 3B, where it talks about the areas of importance that the governor should pick from to fill these seats generally, where it says not limited to higher ed, healthcare, scientific research, engineering and technology, and then labor is added to that list also. Then the seat is on line 3 on the back of the page there under D, one person with experience representing the interests of employees of the university. That is the extent of the bill. We worked with folks from Oregon Health and Science University on the House side to refine this language. We took out the piece that it says it cannot be an employee of the university. We worked on that language, and this is actually their language that they're submitted to us, the experience representing the interests of employees of the university, so we added that. And this also isn't an additional member of the board. It designates one of the current nine positions. Of the nine currently, I believe it's there's three positions currently designated out of the nine, and this would add the fourth.
Jack, where does it say the governor has to pick from this list?
To assist the governor in appointing a member with experience representing employees, the two largest collective bargaining units at the university shall submit a list of at least three nominees to the governor for consideration. It was my understanding from legislative counsel that essentially he has to pick from those three names. You're right, me reading that now, it's not entirely clear.
I thought that would be helpful, but what if he chooses someone else, and to what, if he doesn't go off that list, then to what extent does that person have to be, qualified as a labor representative?
It was my understanding from legislative counsel and from the discussions in the House that he had to select from that list.
I've been, I've
I do realize what you're saying now as I read it. That doesn't appear to be super clear. So that's something I can clarify with legislative counsel.
Okay. Other questions?
I have another one, too. In existing law, which is page 2 of the engrossed bill, line 5, except for the president of the university, no voting member may be an employee of the university. And so if you selected, say, an ONA member, they would not be a voting member then. So they would be essentially ex officio as the president, correct?
This person cannot be an employee of the university. So we don't intend for this to be, frankly, either one of these two folks here that would serve that role. It's somebody that's helped, you know, directed by our two groups, but it's somebody that has to take into account the interests of all employees, not just nurses, not just these folks, but somebody that has the, you know, interests of employees as
okay.
an entire institution.
All right, so just to be clear for what you said then, you would not have a present member who was an ONA member or an ASPE member of the university who would be an employee of OHSU, but it could be somebody who used to work there who maybe was a labor rep or somebody else, but they would not currently be an employee.
Okay. That's correct.
Okay.
Good. Other questions?
Mr. Chair. Thank you. I had actually the same question that you had, and if we're clarifying from getting clarification from legislative counsel about the intent, and you may notice that I'm a co-sponsor of this bill, and I don't know what it means in the, under the existing language, so I would certainly appreciate, I wasn't involved in crafting the language at all, but I would certainly appreciate that clarification. And also, the way I read it, just to clarify for the record, that there's the two largest collective bargaining units shall submit a list, and I'm assuming that's one list from the two groups, not... Okay.
That's correct.
Just to clarify that.
Okay. And to clarify on Senator Messer's question, number 4 on line 5 where he referenced there, that's the piece that was changed. So it says, except for the president of the university, no voting member may be an employee of the university. So that stays in there. That language is clear.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Leslie Halleck and John Juncker.
Dr. Halleck is a colleague of mine on the Northwest Health Foundation Board, and John Juncker is in the Oregon Government Hall of Fame budget writers lead. Welcome.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Leslie Halleck. I'm the provost at OHSU, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify. My testimony is in front of you. Normally, I do not read testimony, but I will follow the script fairly closely because in the interest of your time and because the points that we want to make are very important. OHSU opposes House Bill 2570, which would require one of the positions on the OHSU board be dedicated to a member representing the employees of the university. Essentially, this bill carves out a statutory slot for a labor representative on the OHSU board. Let me start by saying very clearly that OHSU would welcome the addition of a person who has a labor background, who has labor experience on the board of directors. We are, as you heard from the AFSCME spokesperson, we enjoy a very positive relationship with the two representative groups. And we've consistently indicated both to legislators and to the governor that we would be happy to join with our colleagues from labor to specifically suggest candidates to the governor that he might choose to nominate. That isn't really what this is about. We'd also embrace having a statute altered to indicate that labor should be one of the criteria, one of the areas of expertise from which the governor should look in terms of considering potential nominees. The problem from the institution's perspective about the current bill is twofold. One is that it limits the governor and the Senate in terms of any single appointment to a specific representative. There are times when that would be fine, and there are times when that would be inappropriate. And there have been cases in the recent past, because of Sarbanes-Oxley and because of some of the very complex health system finances, where it was absolutely essential that the next person appointed would have specific financial expertise, for example. And so that would be precluded in this circumstance at times. The other issue that I think is critical to consider is the one of sort of representation. This would set a precedent that essentially lays out a confederation of individual representative units. And if you think about it, and certainly we have been petitioned by other representative groups. The faculty at OHSU represent a very large group of people, approximately 40%, 30% of the employee base that are not specifically represented on the board. The unclassified administrators, who are basically the management staff and staff in the various units, are not represented in this scenario. Patients are not represented in this scenario. So there are a series, and you could go on and on, physicians, dentists, and so on. So there are a number of practitioners, with the exception of nurses, and all the faculty at OHSU who deliver the physician clinical care and some of the nurse clinical care would not be represented. So it's a complicated pathway once you start representing groups of employees, even with a person who isn't currently an employee. Beyond that, one of the most critical aspects, and frankly I think one of the reasons our board has been of such high caliber, is that each individual on the board represents the overall interest of the institution. They have a fiduciary responsibility to do that, and that's how they think, much like you have to do that when you're representing the final budget. You have to think about the whole program and the trade-offs across the board. So I think that's our biggest concern, is this sort of slippery slope. If you start having one representative, then pretty soon you have to have another representative, or you have a conflict of interest, basically, where you're only representing one point of view and not that of other groups. There are two specific groups that are called out in the original statute, and I want to speak to those because they're really different circumstances. One is the crossover board member with the OUS board. This, when the Senate Bill 2, which established the public corporation for OHSU, was introduced, OHSU was one of eight institutions in the higher ed, in the OUS system, in the higher ed system. In coming out of, as it were, the higher ed system administratively, financially, we did not really come out educationally in many ways. There's an obligation in the statute to coordinate with higher ed. As provost, I've been provost a long time, and as provost, I have continued to sit on the academic council or the provost council that approves new degree granting programs with higher ed. So the link with higher ed is one of coordinating the educational programs across the institutions, and that's a very important link. The second is the student representative. And the student is not an employee, so they don't have the same potential conflict in terms of representation. And there's a long tradition in Oregon history that educational boards have student members. So when OHSU's statute was written, it was taken from the higher ed statutes and very, very similar sorts of considerations in having students on the board, in part to kind of remind us why a university exists, that you're there to educate students. And so that's the history of those two specific positions, neither of which represent a specific group of employees. So in closing, I want to make sure that we're very clear. OHSU is not at all reluctant to have a labor representative on the board. In fact, we would embrace it. But what we are trying to illustrate is that a representative board will not serve the state as well. Both the governor and the Senate have the ability to determine who the next board member should be. And if the Senate isn't pleased with the nomination, it can refuse to confirm it until the right nomination comes forward. So the control elements already exist. So I think at that point, I will close and be happy to take any questions you might have. And my colleague and our board member, John Yonkers, is sitting to my right and may wish to add any comments or, of course, can answer questions as well. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Yonker. I am retired. I am a newly appointed member of OHSU's board, so I'm the kid in the group, I guess. The only thing I could add is maybe some experience that I've had in my 33 years in public service and the numerous boards and commissions that I was on, and this will only take a second, but I agree with what we're trying to do here, and I just want to pass on some things. And I think the slippery slope issue is the one that's important that you need to address in some way in this process. There's two slippery slopes to some extent, and we've mentioned both of them there, but I want to be clear what they are. One is the size of an effective board, whether it's a board of directors or a commission board. Our experience is that the numbers are 5, 7, and 9. Those three work pretty well. We have some commissions that have got up to 22 by adding one more interest group and one more interest group. They become pretty much dysfunctional at that level, and they have to break off into subcommittees if they're going to try to do anything. So I appreciate the fact that you've changed the numbers in here to try to stay at the same number of 9 or 10, including the president on the commission. But that is a slippery slope. As you heard, there will be others that want to do this, and you have to. The key is, and you've done that, is to address the job skills and abilities as background to choosing the right people on the board. And you put that in that section of this proposal. You have put something in there on some knowledge, background, et cetera, of the labor, which is very appropriate. This is, and I know I'm not telling any of you anything you don't already know. This is a huge institution with so much going on in so many different areas, whether it's the school or the hospital or the research, and the people on this board, with maybe the exception of the newbie, are very high-powered, qualified people that, again, with no pay and no real dog in the fight, so to speak, are working very hard to make all of this continue to work. And they've done a wonderful job since. I believe that this was formed, the OHSU, as we know it today, was formed in about 1995. I was here then. I remember that. And there was a lot of debate over whether it was going to work better or worse, and it's working a lot better. I just wanted to tell you that, in my opinion. The second slippery slope would be when you designate someone to come out of a certain group, some people that have that designation and are appointed believe that they have their number one priority has to do the best they can for whatever group they're representing. And if they understand it that way and go down that road, that's the disaster to some extent we got at the Public Employees Retirement Board. If you remember some of the history, we had about a 5 or 7-member board in the early 80s. See how far I go back? It's embarrassing. And then in the late 80s, and we had, you know, at least 3 people that weren't public employees, never had been, you know, were worrying about investments and actuarial issues and all that. And somehow in the late 80s, we appointed a much larger board that ended up essentially almost half labor and half management and all employees or representing employees. And they got hung up on, well, you know, what can we do here that We have to be sure nobody gets hurt in this process. Well, when the economy changes, sometimes there's at least temporary hurt that just somebody has to make a decision and it has to happen. And then the legislature came in, and I know you've changed that board back to about a five-member board with a representative of management and a representative of labor and three people, again, that have backgrounds that that board needs that aren't employees and never work kind of thing. So, but I'd be willing to bet there's something out there that would say maybe in the future we should be adding more members to that board. That's just the way it works. But I, with that, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions. And I appreciate your hard work very much.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions, probably for Ms. Halleck. The board, just because, Mr. Junker, you're new to the board, I'll let her, you know, handle that first. Among other things, would ratify contracts with the bargaining units, right?
Indirectly. They approve the budget of the university, which incorporates the budget of the bargain, in essence. Yes.
And so then who bargains the contract for the university?
It's a team and led by an outside attorney that's contracted, but there's a team, the HR vice president, and a group of representative a group of employees.
Okay, and so then that's ratified by the board then, the work of the...
It is incorporated into the budget, which is approved by the board, okay. So indirectly.
Okay, and my second question is, I know on the hospital level you have independent folks and you have contract employees. So do you have physicians that are and residents and others who are employees of the university?
Yes.
Okay. And they would not be represented under this bill?
That's correct.
Okay. I guess that just leaves my only thought about the interest of representing employees, I think, is a very legitimate issue. But there's a large set of employees who would not be represented, at least under the model here, and that would be everyone else who is employed by the university.
That's right.
I mean, assuming, if you assume that this is a right thing to do in the first place, but if it is, then is it right to take a section of the employees to have a representation and others with different interests not represented?
Senator Metzger and Chairman Haas, that's exactly the point. There are almost half of the employees would not be represented here.
Can I have one other follow-up question?
Yes, sir.
I know it's not a labor organization, but is there any professional organization where they might represent those other folks, the doctors and stuff, who, say, for example, might also be able to submit names as representative of employees of the university?
There certainly are. There are professional associations for all the providers, all health. Virtually anyone with a license has a professional association associated with them, and they would be, in this spirit would be another approach, but that's not what this bill says.
Okay. Thank you for the answers.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Halleck, you mentioned that the student board representative is not an employee of OHSU. And the way I understand the amendments that were made to the bill on the House side, neither is the new member with labor background. Is that correct?
Senator Bonamici, that's a very good point, and I misspoke. Basically, I mean, it's true that the student's not an employee, but the point there is really that the student doesn't represent a group of employees of the institution. So they, as a group, are not paid by the institution. In fact, they pay the institution. So they're, in a way, a customer of the institution. So it's a very different kind of spirit with which they're appointed.
Right, understood. And then I guess I just wanted to make a comment. I would hope that with a board this size, you aren't relying on the board members to monitor compliance with Sarbanes-Oxley. I know you have very competent counsel who helps you with that issue.
Senator Bonamici, that's certainly true. However, we do have a fiduciary sort of audit function and a financial oversight function that is the board's responsibility. So that's really what I meant.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is anybody else signed up? Is there anyone else who'd like to testify on House Bill 2570? If not, I will close public hearing on House Bill 2570.
6. I'd like to open a public hearing on HCR 6.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, HCR 6 congratulates Dave Frohnmayer for his leadership, public service, and accomplishments. There's no fiscal or revenue impact for this measure, but you do have in your packets a letter from Ed Ray, the president of Oregon State University, as well as the city of Eugene in support of the measure.
Okay, do we have anyone signed up to testify
know.
On
Kevin,
this?
I think. Kevin.
Kevin?
Thank you, Chair Haas, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kevin Moore. I am Senator Pazonsky's legislative aide. And Senator Pazonsky is next door in his committee at the moment, which is short on people, so he asked me to come by and express his enthusiasm for this resolution. He believes it's a fitting way to honor and recognize President Frohnmayer's work at the University of Oregon and his previous public service, including as a state representative and as the Attorney General. And I understand that President Frohnmayer has an impressive record in front of the Supreme Court, so also something to recognize.
I think he's 7-1.
Yeah, right. On behalf
that's
of Oregon.
Good.
Okay.
So that's all from me.
Thank you, Kevin.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it. And the Chancellor is here in the back row.
I'll sit back here.
Senator Haas, members of the committee, for the record, George Pernsteiner, Chancellor of the Oregon University System. Thank you for the opportunity to speak briefly about House Concurrent Resolution Number 6, which honors Dave Frohnmayer, who, as you just heard, has been a legislator, the Attorney General. He's been a professor of law. He's been the dean of the law school. And for the last 15 years, he's been president of the University of Oregon. And although I've known Dave in some of those other roles, it is as president that I want to speak about his contributions there. The resolution talks about $852 million in a donation from a capital campaign, and that's very true. Largest capital campaign, most successful one in the history of the state of Oregon, regardless of what nonprofit he was being represented. But what it doesn't say is that that was the second one, and he held the prior record as well. And Dave Frohnmayer has done a remarkable job for the University of Oregon in the last 15 years. Buildings have been built or renovated for every single academic school or college. You've heard about the various athletic facilities, but he's also built the first residence halls at the university in more than 40 years. A lot of that has been done with donated money. He's an exemplary fundraiser, and that has been something we have sorely needed in these times. The other thing that I would note is that the University of Oregon is now recognized around the world as one of the preeminent research institutions in the world. Shanghai University recognized it as one of the top 200 universities in the world not long ago. And I think that's a testament also to the faculty, the staff, the students, and the leadership of President Frohnmayer. The university now has a portfolio of more than $100 million a year in funded research, far more than could even have been imagined 15 years ago. But I think the most important thing is that on June the 13th, he will get writer's cramp signing another 4,500 diplomas, which will bring to almost 60,000 the number of people in Oregon who have received degrees or certificates from the University of Oregon during his tenure as president. So I urge your approval of House Concurrent Resolution 6. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
I do have a question.
Chancellor, Senator Metzger.
Does he really sign every one of them personally?
There's the signature machine.
I think there is. Okay, well, I just wanted to make sure the record was clear on that. Yeah, I do have another comment, too, Mr. Chair, and I'm very happy to support this resolution, and I've been very, very impressed with Dave's leadership in the University of Oregon. My niece actually occupied one of those new dorm rooms last year, when it was brand new, and so she is appreciative of that as well. Also appreciate Dave's great service, legal service to the state. In fact, when my colleagues, after end of session and they have nothing else to read, would read a brilliant amicus that Mr. Frohnmayer wrote in the early 1990s, basically challenging the initiative process to amend the Constitution for things other than limiting the scope of government. And we've had a number of those things, and yet have not been challenged, so has not gone to the Supreme Court, but would I think, have a tremendous improvement in our initiative system if we actually followed our own constitution. And hopefully someday Mr. Frohmeyer's great words will end up being used in a court to defend the original intent of the initiative system. So throughout his career, he's been just a great servant to the citizens of Oregon.
And I certainly echo those comments. And
thank you. That is the comment, and I'm more than happy to support this. I've known Dave for a number of years, I was thinking back what a small state we have, and thinking of the relationship between the Frohmeyer family and the Bowerman family that goes back a couple generations at this point in time, and just the connections there and that relationship's bond, Phil Knight, I believe, so which has had some benefit to the university as well. But, you know, that goes back to when they were all in Medford at one point in time. So interesting book, by the way. I found it fascinating. So,
Mr. Chair,
Senator Bonamici,
as a double duck, I can't resist the the opportunity to add my support for this House Concurrent Resolution 6 honoring Dave Frohmeyer, although I was long gone from the university during his tenure, both as the dean of the law school and as president of the university. I'm in constant contact with my brother, who's worked at the university about the same number of years as I've been gone, and he can't say enough good things about Dave during all of his work there. And I wanted to say that as an alum of the university, it certainly has been wonderful to watch the stories and to hear about how the university has continued to rise as a preeminent university in our state. So I'm very happy that this resolution was brought forward, and I'm happy to lend my support.
Yeah, Ms. Chair, just one more comment. Last year, my stepdaughter was a member of his leadership class, which he does every year. She was, it may be one of the greatest learning experiences she's had, and he's just an extraordinary man.
Yes, he did all this while the legislature was continually sending him less and less to keep things running down there, and his job getting harder and harder. So,
big shoes to fill.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chancellor.
Thank you.
Let me close public hearing on HCR 6 and open up a work session on HCR 6.
Mr. Chair, I move that HCR 6 be reported to the floor with a do pass and a do be adopted motion.
Senator Metzger moves that HCR 6 be reported out of committee with a recommendation that it be adopted. Any discussion? Seeing none. Any objection? Seeing none. So ordered. The motion passes. HCR 6 is adopted, and I will ask Senator Prozanski to carry this bill. So I'll close the work session on HCR 6. And committee, we have some quick bills to finish up the work that we started the other day, where we did not have fiscal reports on the Secretary of State's bills. I believe we have all of those fiscal reports now.
Yep.
Can we just take these one at a time? Dana, if you want to quickly go over each, remind us what we're...
Do you want to do a work session on each, or do you just want to get the overview?
Yeah, you're right. That would be a better way to do it. Let me open up a work session on House Bill 2085.
House Bill 2085 modified the list of documents upon which a notarial officer may rely in identifying the person. This is where we talked about badges and signatures and whatnot. And then we have a dash 2 amendment that specifies the fee for a notarial act may not exceed $10 and permits public bodies to accept that fee. There is a minimal fiscal impact statement that's been issued for that, which we did not have when we had it before last time.
Okay. Questions, comments?
We did not adopt the dash 2 amendment. Is that correct?
We did not. Work session. We are in a work session.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2085.
Mr. Metzger moves to adopt the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2085. Is there discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2085 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Metzger moves that House Bill 2085 be reported out of committee with a due pass as amended recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none, the measure goes to the floor with a do pass recommendation. And Senator Metzger, you're up.
Okay.
Care to carry this? Close work session on House Bill 2085 and open up work session on House Bill 2086.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2086 waived the requirement that an administratively dissolved corporation could apply for reinstatement within 5 years. So in other words, they could apply past 5 years, declares an emergency and takes effect upon passage. We have a dash one amendment in front of us as well that specifies the conditions under which the lengthened time would be applicable. There's a minimal fiscal impact from the dash one amendments.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 2086.
Senator Metzger moves to adopt the dash one amendments to House Bill 2086. Is there a discussion? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2086 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Senator Metzger moves that House Bill 2086 be reported out of committee with a do pass amended as amended recommendation. Is there a discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. We're down to Senator Bonamici. Would you carry this bill?
I will. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I will close the work session on House Bill 2086 and open a work session on House Bill 2093.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2093 directs the Secretary of State to establish and collect fees from agencies filing rules. And the Secretary of State, we have some questions on this as far as the subscriptions and how it all worked. And the Secretary of State did provide a letter that was sent out to your offices and is in your packets at this time. And I know that there's a representative here. If there are questions, I can tell you that we have a dash one amendment that requires Secretary of State to publish the required compilation bulletin of rules and orders in print or by placing them on the Internet. It gives them the option. There's a fiscal impact statement on those dash ones. That actually probably Secretary of State hasn't even seen yet. It indicates that the fiscal impact is indeterminate due to the fact that agencies cannot determine with accuracy how much they will be assessed to, quote, generate revenues adequate to pay costs incurred. However, it also indicates that switching from the subscription model would result in approximate savings of $26,000, which would be spread among the 20 subscribing agencies. So it's a bit of a trade-off, it seems.
And this is the letter you have in your packets. We asked them if they could give us some, to the best of their ability, some sort of mix and match as to how this would differ, the historical levels, and they did provide us with that. Mm-hmm. Senator Metzger?
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendment to House Bill 2093.
Senator Metzger moves to adopt the dash one amendments to House Bill 2093. Discussion? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2093 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Senator Metzger moves that House Bill 2093 be reported out of committee with a do pass as amended recommendation. Is there any discussion? Everyone okay with the letter? The information?
Mr. Chair, I liked the approximate savings line of the fiscal.
Yeah, we don't see a lot of that.
Caught my eye.
Seeing none, is there any objection?
Yes.
Senator Cruz objects. The motion passes with Senator Cruz's objection. So I will carry this.
I thought it was my turn.
Okay. See no further business before us. We are adjourned.